Walking on down Main Street, you're relaxed and feeling good. Next thing that you know, you see it. Octopus in my neighborhood.
This is a podfic of the deeply cool adventures of Mr. Steed Bonnet and his magic school bus by Petra Korska. This fic is rated mature, no archive warnings apply. The summary. Steed Bonnet loves teaching fifth grade at Revengeville Elementary School. He has a reputation for weird class field trips and even weirder fashion. The Bon takes his reluctant class of misfits to the dig site of renowned and devastatingly handsome paleontologist Edward Teach. More than just dust and time flies. A word from Lucius. Bizarre means strikingly out of the ordinary, such as 1. Odd, extravagant or eccentric in style or mode. 2. Involving sensational contrasts or incongruities. Example sentence. Mr. Bonnet, our wacky fifth grade teacher, is a bizarre little man. The Bon has a unique sense of style. Sometimes his suits are covered in flowers. We've also seen him in clothes patterned with sailboats, gemstones, teacups and teapots, hurricanes, birds, tropical fruit, constellations, and more. His fashion is totally bizarre. Steed Valerie Bonnet loves teaching. He loves sharing knowledge and learning more about the world, whether art, poetry, literature, history, technology, cultures, science, he loves it all. If he had to label his teaching foci, he wouldn't. But if pressed, he'd call it hamster. History, art, math, science, technology, engineering, reading. He also loves and has a healthy respect for magic. And doesn't everyone? Steed teaches fifth grade at Revengeville Elementary School. He's been teaching for about 5 years, ever since he quit his stifling old job and sold the company he inherited from his father for a tidy profit. The last few years have showcased what was previously missing in his life: self-reflection, exploration, joy. He has always loved learning more than capitalism, anyway, and what better way to spend his days than help young people find things that inspire them? To that end, he'd got his teaching credential, found a job in a mid-sized seaside community, and bought his own school bus for field trips from a strange woman with frizzy red hair. Steed thinks sometimes about the woman who sold him the bus. She had appeared in his classroom the week before his first day of teaching, a sparkle in her eye, asking if he liked science and whether he'd like to buy a bus. She wore a high-collared purple dress covered in planets and the sun, and Steed had instantly adored her. Oddly, the bus came with a driver, but seeing as Steed didn't have a permit to drive a bus, it seemed like a win-win. Nathaniel Buttons is a bit of an odd bird, not to mention his pet seagull, Liv. He pays for Mr. Buttons' salary himself, of course. He hasn't seen the frizzle-haired woman since she handed him the bill of sale, but she sends postcards and he has the lingering sense that they know each other somehow. Maybe some multidimensional cross-universe situation, which he now has ample reason to believe is entirely possible. She had mentioned her name was Valerie and winked at him. And wasn't that an odd coincidence? Valerie was an old family name, his mother once said. Maybe if Steed put his spit in a bottle, he'd find out they shared some strands of DNA. Wouldn't that be something? Mr. Buttons won't speak of her except in riddles. But the postcards Steed gets comes from strange locations all over the world with brilliant field trip ideas, all signed VF. He's utilised most of them, with Mr. Buttons' help, of course. It turns out his school bus is, well, it's special, unique, magical even. And so are the kids he teaches. In just a few short years of teaching, he has touched the depths of the ocean and the outermost reaches of the solar system. That's not an exaggeration. From the outside, Steed Bonnet's life might seem a bit wacky, but he reasons that we only live one life, and he has decided to lean into it, no matter that his bus can seemingly bend all the rules of physics and the space-time continuum, because, wow. He wonders what the kids tell their parents when they go home at night, but no one's complained. The principal of Revengeville Elementary recently stated in the school newsletter that parents say Mr. Bonnet's students have the best imagination despite their missing test scores. As a note, Mr. Bonnet's class standardized tests tend to get lost, and this is not reflective of the administration. We believe Mr. Bonnet's students are at an equal educational level to the other same grade classes. No matter. The district admin likes that his students win essay contests and that Steed donates his salary to the PTA. His kids check out the most books from the school librarian, and isn't that a huge point of pride? Furthermore, Steed doesn't really believe in standardized tests, if he's honest. Plus, their field trips often conflict with the state testing schedules, and the bus waits for no one. And now that we've finished our unit on native, invasive, and naturalized plants in our area, we are moving on to the dinosaur unit, Steed gushes to his classroom. Awesome, Mr. Bonnet, says Lola one day. Hooray, I'm so sick of rhizomes, says Lucius. My favourite dinosaur is the Stegosaurus, says Wee John. Velociraptors are better, says Roach. Remember the kitchen scene in Jurassic Park? Ugh, says Jim, rolling their eyes. The dinosaurs in that movie are Deinonychus. Who would win? Pirates or a velociraptor? Asks Pete. Ay, Dios mio, Jim curses. Steed lets it go, partially because even at 11 years old, Jim sort of scares him. Dinosaurs lived like 100 million years ago, Petey, drawls Lucius, rolling his eyes. Steed nods encouragingly at the boy with swoopy brown hair and a surprising amount of mutton chop on his pale face. They vaguely look like pigtails. No human ever met a dinosaur. Ugh, sighs a depressed, reedy voice. Steed's only bespectacled student is frowning, dejectedly picking threads from his grey and yellow striped polo. Steed can tell, just by glancing at the boy, that he's thinking, Mr. Bonnet is a dinosaur. That's not very nice, Izzy, Steed scolds gently. Izzy looks up, mutinous. His expression is an open book. How does Mr. Bonnet know what I'm thinking? Steed just smiles. We never learnt about dinosaurs at my old school, Swede confides to Frenchie in a loud, awed sort of whisper. The new kid is an angel, Steed gushes silently to himself. After a moment of conversational flurry, he clasps his hands together to get his fifth grader's attention. And to celebrate the start of our new unit, we're going on a field trip. Today! There's a ringing silence, which Steed takes to mean everyone is suitably impressed. Please let this be a normal field trip, Izzy begs, raising his clasped hands towards the ceiling. To the bus, Steed declares, grabbing his favourite tailored blazer and throwing open the classroom door. Cruising down the main street, relaxed and feeling good, Steed peers over the back of the frontmost passenger seat with a soft smile. His students generally seem excited or positively neutral, all except for Izzy. Steed makes a mental note to keep an eye on him and try to cheer him up when needed. But other than that, things seem swell. Buttons navigates them onto the highway, somehow an hour ahead of the schedule to Dinosaur Country, and there's a minimal amount of seagull poop near the driver's seat, which Steed takes as another win. Contrary to old popular beliefs, class, says Steed while the bus sways worryingly, picking up speed. Mammals were around during the dinosaur age. They were just small rodent-like creatures called cynodonts, the ancestors of mammals. The end of the dinosaur age, terribly messy as it was, really heralded the moment of mammalian evolution. Did humans ever see a dinosaur? Asked Swede, fiddling with the brand new enamel name tag affixed to his pink shirt. Steed is glad he bought everyone proper name tags to wear on class field trips. The "Hello, my name is, my pronouns are" stickers would always tear, disintegrate or dissolve, depending on the particular field trip. The enamel tags are far superior, in his opinion, and a great souvenir for his students when they move up a grade. That's only possible with time travel, Lucius sighs, rolling his eyes. Steed suppresses a giggle behind his hand as he observes the exchange. There were three general periods of dinosaurs, class: the Triassic, the Jurassic, and the Cretaceous. But these spanned millions of years, and lots happened to the world within these periods. Scientists like the paleontologists we're about to meet say that dinosaurs roamed Earth 77 times longer than humans have yet. This is a lot of information to take in, says Wee John. My head hurts, says Roach. My tummy hurts, says Izzy. Can't we just do an art project? Asks Frenchie. Practical knowledge and creative expression go together, Steed answers cheerily. He passes Izzy a chewable pink bismuth tablet. We'll be doing dioramas later this week and a collaborative song. Jot down some neat ideas during our field trip. I'm sure we'll see some inspiring foliage. We're going to the desert, whispers Jim, incredulous. They look out the window, eyes widening. Actually, we're already there. Can't you tell, Jim? Olawande whispers back. Steed always finds it adorable that his class thinks he can't hear them. This is going to be another one of the Bond's famous wacky class trips. Steed can almost hear Izzy cringing. I need to get out of here, the sour-faced boy hisses to Lucius. I want my mum's. Would you rather fight a T-Rex-sized duck or 100 duck-sized T-Rexes? Pete demands to no one in particular. All right, that's quite enough. Steed nearly folds double when Buttons turns the wheel of the bus abruptly. Several children scream. Liv squawks from her perch and there's a squelching noise from behind Steed. He chooses to ignore it. Thankfully, everyone's wearing their seatbelts, and the sudden motion of the bus turning onto a dirt lane has interrupted the mutinous talk from his students. Steed clears his throat for attention. We're nearly there, kids. Huzzah! Isn't this fun? There's an awkward silence. Now remember, we're here to learn and explore, but don't scarper off without a buddy. And if someone has a question, what do we do? There's another awkward silence until the tallest boy in the class, Wee John, raises his hand. He has foil star stickers on his forehead that are half peeling off. Steed gestures encouragingly at him. We talk it through? As a... The class joins in, mostly enthusiastically.
As a crew!
Steed pumps his arm in the air. That's right! Are we here? Steed asks excitedly, surging forward to look over Button's shoulder. He rears back, still grinning, when Liv tries to bite his nose. Button's eyes go glassy and he stares through the windshield into the middle distance. Aye, Mr. Bonnet, we be here, in the Republic of Dinosaurs, where the law lies doggo and plunderers rule. There's a prolonged silence from Steed and the students. Steed clears his throat and attempts to lighten the mood. One can only hope he's not talking to us kids, but if he is, wow, how exciting. That was really scary, whispers Olawande. I knew I should have stayed home today, says Izzy. The new kid whimpers. Your parents signed waivers, Steed says distractedly. He unbuckles his seatbelt and starts checking that everyone's got their name tags, boots, hats, water bottles and bags, pleased that they all match. Of course they match. Steve bought everyone matching gear after his first field trip 5 years ago. The magic school bus transforms the kids into proper gear once they really get going, but not before. He starts passing out tubes of sunscreen. Places, everyone, he calls as the zinc oxide-covered children rush off the bus, giving Buttons a noticeably wide berth as they squeeze past front seats. Buttons hums a peppy tune that Steed can't quite place, but might be a little Richard or Lin-Manuel Miranda song. Something about octopus in your neighbourhood, maybe? Anyway, it's more cheerful than creepy, and that's a win. Steed pats him on the shoulder, gives Liv a bit of the old fuck eye to shame her about pooping on the bus floor again, and then follows the kids out into the sun-drenched desert. The first thing Steed notices is that it's quite hot. The second thing Steed notices is that the tips of his brand new shoes, with their lovely inset moth pattern, get immediately dusty. He squawks indignantly, retrieving a handkerchief from a pocket to clean them. The third thing Steed notices is that, instead of waiting for him, his class has gone over to a cluster of tents set up in the half circle around an extinguished fire pit. The kids have surrounded the only person in the camp, a surprised-looking older man, with an ample belly poking out of his unbuttoned black shirt and an odd studded headband. They're peppering him with questions, and Steed hustles over to relieve the man. Is that real? Roach is asking him, pointing at the huge fang or claw dangling from a chain around his neck. Absolutely not, says the man, turning away from the boy in a black and pink striped shirt and linen trousers. He looks remarkably guilty, but Steed decides that that's this man's business. He extends his hand, pushing through the crowd of youngsters he so adores. I'm Mr. Bonnet. How do you do? Fang, says the man, shaking with a grip that is two shades too hard. Steed whimpers. Who are you? We're from Revengeville Elementary. I've been coordinating with the site lead via email about our visit. Jeff, I believe? The man with the studded headband blinks. You need to talk to Dr. Teach. Oh, another teacher, Steed replies brightly, chortling, but the joke apparently lands flat with everyone around him, Fang included. He's like my dad, but worse, Pete whispers to Lucius. Way worse, Lucius agrees. Who are we meeting? Olawande asks as the class follows the man out of the tent, down a path that's clearly been made by many, many footfalls and is marked with little flags to keep people off the player. Only the most important fossil hunter in the world, replies the man with long black dreads and a side fade. He stands in the middle of the path, blocking their way. He grins toothily. He has an English accent, short black beard, and a pickaxe slug over one shoulder. More than Dr. Ellie Sattler? Demands headband man. I said what I said, Fangy. Steed blinks. Jeff, the paleontologist, is famous. His epistolary friend mentioned in her postcard that Jeff was an old friend from school and gave him Jeff's email address. Steed trusted VF completely, so hadn't thought to look him up once they had confirmed the field trip. The man had a series of acronyms after his name anyway. Steed really was quite busy after all, what with lesson planning, tending his plants, feeding all the class pets, buying fun clothes to delight the children and his colleagues. He knows their shocked faces each day means they're impressed. Birdsitting Liv, when Buttons mysteriously disappears every 4 weeks or so, researching the next 5 field trips, and so on. Steed supposes it doesn't matter, given he wasn't planning on taking too much of the specialists' time. The paleontologists, Fang and Ivan, lead Steed's class the active dig, chattering all the way. I think Spinosaurus babies would be really cute, says Fang. Probably like the size of a small dog. Fuzzy duckling feathers, a sail on their back, a cute tail. Teeth sharp as knives, though.
Aww,
say Jim and Roach. Adorable,
agrees Ivan. Then he frowns, rubbing his beard. Until it grew up. Yeah, then it'd eat you. At my old school, we didn't get eaten by dinosaurs, says Swede, blue eyes the size of dinner plates. You'll probably be fine, Steed assures him. They walk around a small rise and then they see it. The dig site sits in a flat divot between a few hills, with a dozen crew spread out in the dirt. Each paleontologist has various tools splayed about them, trowels, shovels, brushes, as they inspect what Steed suspects is quite an auspicious trove of fossils. The kids gasp. Lucius starts rattling off facts about how most animals and plants never turn into fossils and that we're lucky to find what we do. He's right, of course. Fang takes them further into the site, but stops just outside a low stretch of red tape that marks the outline of the dig. Just past the tape is a person crouched in front of an exposed bone, huge and white, the earth dug out around it. From behind, Steed can see that they're wearing black jeans, dusty boots, and a purple tank top, silver-streaked dark hair done up in a messy bun at the back of their head. The wavy strands are coming loose in the light breeze, giving Steed a startling first impression that the person's hair is actually tendrils of smoke. A chisel flattens the shape of a faded black hat, sitting in the dirt beside them. They have lovely brown skin, two dark bands encircling one bicep. Their arms, thick with muscle, but also a little softness, flex as their owner. A man, Steed thinks, runs his hand over the fossil. Steed realizes his heart is fluttering quite quickly and has to wipe his brow with another handkerchief. Yo, boss, visitors, school kids and their teacher. The man rises with feline grace. He rolls his shoulders, cracks his neck, then turns. And suddenly, Steed feels hot all over, more so than when he stepped off the bus. His gaze sweeps over Fang and the children, grinning as he wipes his hands on his jeans. There's a smear of dirt on his handsome face and some sort of contraption strapped around his left knee. More tattoos spill down his arms with a hint of something across his collarbones. He wears several earrings, including one that looks like a dinosaur fang. He has a magnificently curly salt and pepper beard, dark moustache. When his gaze reaches Steed, Steed is struck that this man has the kindest, warmest brown eyes that he has ever seen. In fact, they almost seem to glow. Steed clenches his fingers into fists, not quite containing the whimper that escapes his throat. Oh no, he thinks in desperation. He's hot.
2, 1, lift off.
What are dinosaurs? By Olawande. Dinosaurs were a group of special prehistoric reptiles with straight legs, upright limbs, that lived on land during the Mesozoic era. Dinosaurs lived 252 to 65 million years ago. The age of dinosaurs is broken up into three periods, Triassic, Jurassic, and Cretaceous. Birds, not lizards, are the descendants of dinosaurs. Oh no. He's hot. Ed stares at the pale-skinned man wearing a velvet suit in the middle of a desert. It's red, magenta, pink, emblazoned with a pattern of blue-crested birds and leafy branches. His trousers match the colour of the fabric, and he wears a crisp black button-down with tiny white polka dots. He's missing a tie, and several buttons are undone at the throat, apparently in deference to the temperature. Ed has to drag his gaze up from the exposed bit of ginger chest hair and freckles spilling down his throat to look the man in the face and... fuck. The man has hazel eyes, the colour of a rather exquisite gemstone his friend Anne unearthed at her archaeological dig. A mop of coiffed golden curls frames the man's affable face, and a whisper of a dimple seems to sit permanently on his cheek. He looks eminently fuckable. And Ed knows in an instant that he is in trouble. He drops his eyes from the man's handsome face, skating over his broad chest and down his shapely legs, before landing on an incredibly impractical wingtip-heeled loafers patterned with colourful moths. He keeps staring, mouth dry. "Hello," says Ed's new crush, waving cheerfully as he approaches like a quail leading its chicks. Ed notices that he has gone pink around the ears as he clearly checks Ed out too. The man smiles, even though Ed hasn't returned his greeting. "We're from Revengeville Elementary?" "Mate," says Ed, finally finding his voice, "you should be wearing proper boots out here, else you'll trip and your guts will spill out all over the place." "Oh, how absolutely lovely," titters the blonde man, apparently delighted. The man's obviously a lunatic. There's something about him that Ed immediately likes. The kids behind him almost collectively roll their eyes or look ill. Somehow, they're all wearing decent boots and matching UV sun hats despite their teacher's unique wardrobe. Not sure how to react, Ed plasters the most neutral smile he can conjure on his face and sticks out his dusty, sweaty hand. "I'm Ed." "Steed. Steed Bonnet." The warm hand that slides against his palm is soft but firm. Ed coughs and lets go more quickly than he'd prefer. They're both professionals, after all, in front of children. Still, he doesn't miss that the wildly dressed, wildly striking man standing before him looks almost disappointed. His heart beats a bit quicker than normal. He coughs again, not quite sure it covers the awkward silence hanging between them. He's glad for his beard, because he can't help the heat that starts creeping up his neck. "His name is Steed," someone hisses. Out of the corner of his eye, Ed sees the kids slap their cheeks in apparent shock. "It's bad luck to know your teacher's real name," another kid moans, ashen-faced. "Frenchie, that's not even a superstition I've heard of." "You know, I thought the scientist would be taller." Steed hastens to take control of the situation, his face flushed with exasperation now. Ed swallows hard, both amused and a little turned on, watching this weird, cute man in a velvet suit try to prevent his students spiralling into kid-only chaos. "Pleasure to meet you, Steed," Ed says loudly, interrupting the cacophony of voices. The man shoots him a grateful smile and, oh, the dimple is back. Ed shivers in spite of himself. He should definitely not feel this flustered on the job, much less about a school teacher taking his students on a perfectly normal class field trip. "Likewise, Ed," Steed is saying, in a scolding teacher voice that definitely does something to Ed's brain. "Oh, no. But my class calls me Mr. Bonnet." Steed gives his students a stern look with a raised eyebrow that Ed wants to lick. He schools his features just before Steed turns back to him. I thought I was meeting Jeff, the paleontologist." Oh, yeah, says Ed, trying to scramble his thoughts into coherency. "I know all about you. Jeff told me about you and the kids from Revengeville. He's off this week. Had to see an emergency accountant or something." "Is that a thing?" asks the boy, wearing the confusing name tag of Roach on his striped T-shirt. Honestly, I'm not sure. Anyway, Jeff is just some guy. I'm in charge of the dig, and we're glad you're here." He grins at the class that has slowly arranged themselves behind their cute teacher. "I'm Ed Teach, professional dinosaur hunter. How do you do?" The knot of elementary schoolers proves remarkably respectful, although Ed's not too familiar with kids to really know. Anyway, he's impressed with their knowledge and questions already. The teacher must be pretty good, he thinks, clocking the man out of the corner of his eye. Despite the smartly tailored jacket, velvet trousers, and ridiculously impractical shoes, Steed moves through the field site with a surprising ease. I wonder what else he's good at. The kids all want to know if the small claw dangling from his left earring is a dinosaur claw. Ed winks at Steed, then tells the kids solemnly that it would be unethical to make a real fossil into jewellery. It definitely is a real fossil, just like Fang's necklace, Only Ed's more subtle about his fashion. Kinda. The kids give Ed all their best dino facts. Ancestors of birds, had feathers, warm-blooded, the huge. Someone mentions that Argentinosaurus was probably the biggest creature to ever walk on land. Another kid drops the knowledge bomb that flying reptiles like pterodactyls weren't actually dinosaurs. Ed still has a bone to pick with the show Dinosaur Train about mainly featuring a pteranodon family, but probably shouldn't get so worked up about it. The show has dinosaurs and a magic train after all, and it teaches kids about science, and that's pretty cool. The kid named Olawande tells everyone that some dinosaurs, like Mayasaura, build nests for their eggs and tend to their young. That's true. Wow, you guys are paleontologists already. 10 faces, 9 kid ones, and 1 captivating grown-up one beam back at Ed. Dinosaur may mean terrible lizard etymologically, Steve tells his students, but the largest dinosaurs were just big sweeties. Herbivores, he means, says Ed, baffled and charmed equally. The biggest dinosaurs ate plants. Probably gentle giants, yeah. They still could have crushed you with their massive frickin' feet if they didn't know you were there. What was the earth like in the time of the dinosaurs? Great question, Steed gushes to the very blonde kid whose name tag says Swede. Earth looked very different in the time of the dinosaurs. Dinosaurs and other prehistoric creatures roamed Pangaea, which was one giant supercontinent. It had rainy jungles, many deserts, warm temperatures, kind of like the Caribbean. Or Aotearoa New Zealand, minus the snow, Ed interjects. Steed looks at Ed, cheeks flushing prettily. You from Wellington? Nah, went to uni there though. Waihu Bay. Ah, Auckland myself. Steed drags his fancy shoe through the dirt, looking up at Ed through his lashes. Not many dinosaurs back home. Not that have been found, anyway, Ed replies, shooting him his cheeky grin. Yet. Hey, mate, you know a lot about dinosaurs. It's cool. Oh, yes, they're fascinating, aren't they? But you'd know that, given your career. I'm actually more of a plantivore myself, Steed confesses almost shyly. What? You're a vegan? No judgment, just... No, I just like plants, Steed says, clearly unable to contain the shrill giggle that escapes him. Ed wants to kiss his dimple and his mouth and the brown mole behind his ear. It's my special interest, really. I've seen some insane foliage in my life. I guess that means I can impress you with my prehistoric flora facts. Oh, impress away. This is boring, a kid groans, interrupting Ed's attempt at nerdy flirting. Oh yeah? Well, come see this. Steve's class presses forward to see what Ed, Ivan, Fang, and the rest of the team are working on, specifically the huge femur Ed was working on when the bus rolled up. Ed's people kneel or sit in the dirt, carefully brushing away dirt from what they already know are fossils of an undescribed species. His team has first dibs on the bones, so he doesn't bother hiding his excitement as he explains. It's not impossible to find a new species of dinosaur, but it's getting harder. There are about 700 described species of dinosaurs, says Ed. He gestures the kids over to the edge of the dig site, surrounded with caution tape. And we're pretty sure the next one is right here at this dig site. We've only found a partial skeleton so far, but we know it's a theropod. You know, like T-Rex or Allosaurus. Cool, says Sweet. That's incredible, Ed, says Steed, his eyes soft with wonder. Ed wants to drown in an ocean of this man. What do you suppose happened to the rest of the fossil? Dunno. It's a pain, if I'm honest. All we need is a skull, a full skeleton. That's all I need to go on Nat Geo and show people what we found. But of course, for science, I'd love to find more than one. Oh, and babies. We need babies. A whole nest of these guys would be great. Ed can feel his blood pumping with excitement as he talks. He loves what he does, digging in the earth to unlock its hidden secrets, the gems of the past, unspoken histories. It's brand spanking new, folks. Well, not new, but it's special. What will you call it, Dr. Teach? The kid named Jim asks. Ed considers this, rubbing his chin through his admittedly impressive facial hair. Not sure, kid. Not given it a lot of thought. Maybe Blackbeardosaurus? The entire class giggles and so does Steed. Ed definitely doesn't wonder the reddened skin of Steed's throat extends into a full body flush under his bespoke suit. He inhales sharply, Steed's bicycle alone around him, and he moves respectful distance away. More like Greybeardosaurus, Ed says under his breath, watching the kids wander around the field site with Fang and Ivan closely supervising. I think it sounds very sophisticated, Steed says softly. Either way.
The kids eat their packed lunches with Ed's crew, chatting amiably with Ivan and Fang and the others. The tall, pale boy wearing a red cardigan sits on a rock overlooking the exposed fossils and pulls out a sketchbook. The grumpy one sits next to him, like a little shadow. Ed watches Steed check in with every kid, tossing kind smiles and touching their shoulders. Each of them, even the grumpster, seem to brighten when Steed takes time with them. He gives big DILF energy. TILF energy? And Ed is here for it. He flips off Fang when he spots the older scientist silently laughing at him. Ed says some cool stuff about the prehistoric eras in an effort to blow everyone's mind, and that he hopes thrills Steed in particular. He tosses in that maidenhair ferns, which you can buy at any random garden shop, as some of the earliest plants in the fossil records. He winks when Steed brightens over the plant facts. Steed really does blush quite nicely, Ed observes. Before Ed can catch a moment with Steed for himself, the kids are suddenly done eating and on their feet, and Steed is approaching Ed with a strange, determined look in his eyes. So, Steed announces brightly, pumping Ed's hand. The kids, Buttons, Liv and I have decided we're going to go look for more of your dinosaurs. Okay. Who's Buttons? Oh, our driver. Steed points to a balding man sitting on the roof of the bus parked by the dig entrance, sharing his lunch with the seagull on his shoulder. Ed blinks, confused how he hadn't noticed this before. I don't know how to drive my bus. Anyway, which way do you think we might go? Are you coming back? Says Ed uneasily. He scratches the back of his neck, not wanting Steed to leave so soon. It's easy to get lost in the desert. Oh, we'll be back. Just want to explore a bit, see if we can't find any dinosaurs of our own. Steed winks at him, and Ed thinks he might melt into a puddle and evaporate up into the atmosphere. Bemused, Ed watches Steed usher the kids onto the bright yellow school bus that shouldn't have been able to make it to the dig site, but must be secretly equipped with four-wheel drive. The driver gets off the roof of the bus, now wearing a flat cap and a red necktie that Ed is sure he wasn't wearing before. The seagull, a real live seagull, flies into the bus ahead of him and the door swings shut. The headlights of the bus wink in the sunlight as Mr. Buttons navigates away from the camp, almost like eyes. Ed shakes his head, trying to clear it of the bees that have clearly invaded his brain. As the bus disappears behind a nearby rise, Ed swears he hears Steed's voice ring out. Bus, do your stuff! When were the first dinosaur fossils discovered? By Frenchy. The first dinosaur was named Megalosaurus, after bones were found in England in 1815. A guy named Sir Richard Owen came up with the term Dinosauria in 1842.
Dr. Teach says prehistoric and indigenous peoples have been finding fossils for thousands of years. They're still found today all over the world. In 2022, people in Texas found dinosaur footprints in a dry riverbed. Some people think that the mythology of creatures like griffins and dragons may come from early discoveries of dinosaur and other fossilized bones, though this is still up for debate. I, for one, believe dragons are a distinct species. In brackets. Mr. Bonnet, please don't mark me down again. I know you believe in cryptids. Exclamation mark, exclamation mark. Well, wasn't that invigorating? Steed exclaims as Buttons navigates the rough terrain back to Ed's field site. Simply magical, I'd say. The school bus bumps cheerily along, though Steed notes some of the students, particularly Izzy, look a bit green around the gills. Still, most of the class looks flushed with the knowledge they gain today. Steed's heart swells. He loves to see children learn new things. We just travelled through time, states Lucius flatly. Through the entire Mesozoic, Oluwande says. In, Roach checks his orange wristwatch. 2 hours. Swede looks a bit shell-shocked, but he is new after all. Izzy is muttering, asteroid, over and over, while rocking back and forth in his seat with his arms crossed. Pete has his ample forehead resting against the window. Jim has a wide, almost maniacal grin on their face, which, okay, that's probably fine. Wee John groans like a Tyrannosaurus Rex, which admittedly also sounds like a foghorn. But no matter. It's the enthusiasm that counts. The bus reaches a hill crest, and Steed gets a view from the large front bus windows of the rocky desert below them, the paleontologists on the valley floor appearing nearly as small as ants from this height. Giddiness darts through Steed that he gets to take his kids on such adventures. It really is a privilege, one he doesn't take lightly. And isn't it a wonder how the creaky old bus can reach the desert so quickly from Revengeville? The miles per gallon on the old girl are quite remarkable. They rumble up to the paleo dig a few minutes later. When Button stops the bus and opens the door, the children spill out onto the dusty terrain. Steed wrinkles his nose, but coaxes Izzy out the door with a few soft words and follows him out. The sun is so bright he has to shield his eyes with his hand. 2 steps away from the bus, Steed trips on a stone, but he finds himself caught in a firm embrace. He blinks rapidly against the light, gazing down at the strong, toned arms embracing him, arms emblazoned with tattoos. Steed wishes he knew Ed well enough to ask what they mean and how far they go. He drags his eyes away from the inked design and looks up into the face of the man holding him. "Oh, hello, Edward," Steed says in a rush. He can feel colour rising in his cheeks as he gazes into kind, stunning eyes, the colour of a redwood trunk or the mast of a ship. Ed helps him back to his feet. "Thank you. Hey, Mr. Bonnet, did you find what you were looking for?" Ed asks, eyes sparkling with amusement as he slowly lets go. Steed regrets the loss of Ed's touch, but he reminds himself that he's a professional. Until he steps back and can see Ed fully, the renowned scientist has let his hair down since the Revengeville group left. The silver-streaked curls fall in waves behind his shoulders, and he's put on his black hat, giving the impression he's a sexy goth cowboy. Steed's forearms feel flush under his jacket and he tugs at the collar of his shirt. It really is hot today. "Oh, I'd say so," Steed replies, possibly louder and higher pitched than necessary. "We went dinosaur hunting. I suppose you call it prospecting, don't you? Anyway, if you go about 100 yards to the west, I think you'll be quite delighted. And it's just Steed, please." "Right. Steed." Steed realises belatedly that they've both lapsed into a comfortable silence as they stare at each other. He's not quite sure Ed heard him about the dinosaur bones, but it doesn't seem to matter.
Ed has a soft look in his gorgeous brown eyes. It strikes Steed quite abruptly that what he's feeling is akin to magnetism, a fundamental force of nature, that powerful physical phenomenon, an inescapable electrical current drawing him towards this fascinating person. It has been a long time since he has experienced this level of attraction, and it's clearly, magnificently mutual. Steed feels a tug on his jacket sleeve and drags his eyes away from Ed to look down at the slight boy beside him. "I hate dinosaurs," Frenchie whines, appearing rather frazzled. Steed tries desperately not to deflate as he notes matching expressions in the rest of his students. It had been a rather long day, and in all the excitement of their expedition, he may have forgotten to offer snacks or bathroom breaks. "Oh," says Steed, voice definitely not cracking. "After all that," he lowers his head to Frenchie's level when the boy beckons him close.
"They have knives in their feet?"
Frenchie confides in a stage whisper.
"And in their faces?"
Steed hears Ed, the hot, no sexy, no fuck, sweet, no professional paleontologist cover a laugh behind his tattooed hand. Steed nods solemnly as Frenchie looks up at him with a vulnerable expression. "Your feelings are valid, dear," says Steed, patting his shoulder. "Let's get you a blueberry bar, okay?" Ed helps get the kids situated in camp chairs arranged around the fire pit, while Steed hands out snacks. He and Fang drag over a pop-up to get some shade on everyone, then he plops down beside Steed in a pink folding chair. "And what did we learn today, class?" Steed asks as everyone eats. "Lots of cool things. For instance, Pete's favourite dinosaur, the Stegosaurus, lived about 150 million years ago, during the late Jurassic period. Tyrannosaurus Rex lived during the Cretaceous period, roughly 65 million years ago." "Yep," says Ed from beside him, flashing Steed a delighted grin. "And you know what that means? Stegosaurus was gone for 80 million years before T-Rex reigned. That's longer than the time separating T-Rex and humans." Ed's big brown eyes are still on him, their knees quite close. The contraption on Ed's leg appears to be a custom knee brace. Steed can't quite suss out why he feels so flustered. He takes a deep breath, then smiles at his class. "What else do we want to tell Dr. Teach what we know about paleontology?"
"Dinosaurs and birds are related."
"Yes, wonderful, John. Birds are the direct descendants of dinosaurs. We know this from the fossil records that Dr. Teach and his colleagues find. Many birds live in groups, just like dinosaurs. They feed their babies in nests and they are warm-blooded, just like we think was the case with some dinosaurs. We can also tell the dinosaurs of birds' ancestors from the similar shape of their pelvic bones." Ed clucks his tongue and points at Steed. "Yeah, here's a cool experiment. Tie a stick to a chicken's butt and let it run. We researchers think that's what a theropod dinosaur might have looked like walking around." "How big of a stick?" Wee John demands immediately. Ed frowns. I don't know. 3 popsicle sticks glued together?" "Cool," says Jim. "Why would you do that?" Steed demands aghast. Roach pumps his arms. "Let's do it." "Or don't," says Steed, waving his arms. "We don't condone animal cruelty, do we, class?" There's a collective
"Aww"
from the entire class and the grown man standing with them. Steed puts on the most serious teacher face he can manage, hands sternly on his hips, but it's a challenge in the face of a man as ruggedly handsome as the paleontologist standing before him. The man in question pouts. "No, Ed," Steed states preemptively. "We don't even have a chicken. And it would be wrong." "But it was in plus one," Ed whines, making his big brown eyes even more doe-like as he pats at Steed. "I said stand down, Edward," Steed scolds, but he can't keep the smile from his face. Ed smirks at him,
brilliant as any comet shooting through the galaxy.
Oh my god,
says Lucius under his breath.
Is this happening?
Olawande hisses. What? Asks Steed, dragging his eyes away from Ed. Hmm? Says Ed, blinking. My stomach hurts, Izzy groans. You need an antacid, says Jim. What's that? Pretty sure we covered that in the inside human body unit, Lucius says, rolling his eyes. Izzy looks sad. I missed that one, remember?
We can go over that again next week, Izzy dear, says Steed in a rush, trying to regain a modicum of control over himself and his students.
Another cool fact. Although they're known for being massive monsters, many dinosaurs were actually smaller than a turkey, and most scientists believe the average dinosaur was the size of a small car.
Yeah,
says Lucius, his voice dripping with teenage-level sarcasm, despite being 11.
We know.
What kind of car? Before Steed or any other grown-up can respond, the kids launch into a loud debate about what cars might be the size of a dinosaur.
Mini Cooper.
A Spark.
A Bug.
Citroen DS, says Roche sagely. Or a Volvo P1800.
Near blah,
Jim scoffs.
Most of the ones I saw were the size of my nana's old station wagon.
Steed watches Ed turn his head almost completely sideways as he considers Jim's statement. The striking paleontologist's hat falls off as he sticks his pinky in his ear, like he's trying to remove moths.
What do you think, Dr. Teach, sir?
Pete asks as he hurries to retrieve Ed's hat. Ed frowns thoughtfully.
Don't know much about cars, mate. I ride a motorcycle.
Ooh!
The kids say in a collective gasp. Even Izzy. Meanwhile, Steed's brain glitches over the mental image of this dashing man in a leather motorcycle jacket. As the kids clean up from their snack and use the camp toilet, what a treat. Lucius shows Ed a detailed drawing of a prehistoric plant torn from his sketchbook. It's an extinct Cladophobus fern that Steed was particularly excited to see during their stop in the Jurassic period. Ed squints at it.
Did you make this up yourself, kid?
Lucius bristles.
I just draw what I see, Mr. Teach.
Dr. Teach, Lucius, Steed corrects gently. Ed's okay. Ed's eyes widen as he looks over the fern again.
Lucius? This is brilliant. Can I keep this?
Lucius makes a face and says, okay, yeah, whatever. But when he turns away from Ed, a smile breaks across his face. Steed swells with pride.
Gosh, it's getting late, everyone, Steed says, looking at his wristwatch, which shows only constellations, three moons and a sun.
VF sent it to him years ago, and Buttons oddly has a matching timepiece. It has no numbers, but he can read it all the same.
We need to be back at school before the final bell.
Steve doesn't miss Ed's disappointed expression as he guides the children back onto the bus. He carefully ticks off each child's name off a clipboard, because it's important to be organised even with a class of 9. Once all the kids have boarded and Liv has done her business outside this time and Buttons is at the helm fiddling with some confusing knobs, Steve leaves to say goodbye to the paleontology team outside.
Thank you so much for your time today, Steve says as Ivan claps him on the shoulder and nearly sends him sprawling into the dirt.
You've got a great crew, Mr. B, says Fang.
I very much agree, Mr. Fang, Steve replies happily. Oh, Ed, don't forget, go that way, about 100 yards and start digging. I bet you'll find some interesting things.
If you say so, Steed. Steed rocks on his heels, surveying the campsite in the path to the dig. It's been a stupendous day of learning, and they met such nice people, including Ed. Especially Ed. Hey, Steed. Ed is suddenly close to Steed. He rubs the back of his neck, his long fingers tangling in his charcoal hair.
Steed watches the way the afternoon light catches in the strands. Steed?
Hmm?
Steed replies, blinking rapidly. I was wondering if I could give you my number. My favourite number is 42, says Steed, a high-pitched giggle escaping his throat. He finds himself thoroughly blushing as he extracts his mobile phone from an inside pocket of his velvet blazer. He knows he can be a lot sometimes and can't quite meet Ed's eyes. He fumbles, but warm hands close around his and the phone before it can fall to the ground. He can almost feel the rich, rumbling baritone of Ed's gentle chuckle. He darts a glance at Ed's handsome face and feels relief. Ed is smiling and his eyes are so kind, and he's still cradling Steed's hand between his palms. You okay there, mate? Wonderful, actually, says Steed, heart fluttering. He smiles back, unable to contain the fizzy, effervescent sensation bubbling through his entire body. Maybe he needs an antacid. I would love to have your phone number. A few minutes later, the children hang out of the windows waving goodbye to Ed, Fang, Ivan, and a few more people in the campsite. The scientists wave back, grinning. Steve looks out the open doors of the bus and catches Ed looking directly at him, the corners of his lovely mouth turned up in a way that feels promising and intensely private. Steve's heart pounds again. Someone, probably Lucius or Izzy, clears their throat pointedly. Startled back into teacher mode, Steed gives the man a tiny wave, then gestures for buttons to close the doors. He turns back to his students, suffused with even more enthusiasm than usual. Seat belts, everyone? Why Does My Stomach Hurt? By Izzy. Because I have IBS and I have to go on stressful class field trips where what we do is perilous, very perilous, and no one believes us afterwards. I may look fine, but I'm mentally devastated. I wish my mums would transfer me. Frowny face emoji. And now it's time for the text messages. 2:15 p.m. Tuesday. Hey, Steed. It's Ed Teach. Hi, Ed. It's Steed Bonnet. Yes, Lamau, I know. You just left on your school bus. Oh, right. I'll text you later tonight, okay? Sounds great, mate. 7:57 p.m. Tuesday. Hello again, Edward. How was the rest of your day? Less exciting after you left, but good. You? The kids and I had such a wonderful time with you. Their homework is to percolate some ideas for an art or creative writing project about dinosaurs. Man, I would have loved that as a kid. Mixing science and art. Thank you. I follow my own brand of pedagogy that I like to call hamster. And that's all in caps lock. Like a class pet? Isn't Liv the bird your class pet? History, art, math, science, technology, engineering, reading. Lamau, hamster. Got it. You're a lunatic and I like it. Really? I like you too, Ed. Ed replies with the smirking face emoji. You're a good teacher, Steed. That means so much. Thank you. You're a good person too, Ed. You were so good with the kids. They adore you. Oh, thanks, mate. I can be kind of a dick. Sometimes.
but I'm trying to be better. I'm not always my best self either, but every tomorrow is a new day, right? Yeah, totally. Hey, so? I want to see you again soon. Steed replies with the blushing face and the smiling face with the smiling eyes emojis. I would love that. Cool. That's cool. Ed sends a purple heart and Steed replies with a blue heart. Then Ed sends, I have 2 ticks to the after hours night this Friday at the Science Museum in town. It's adults only. Want to go with me? Oh my goodness, how did you get those? ? I was so busy with lesson planning when the museum's email arrived that I missed getting tickets. They apparently sold out in minutes. We've got a ! There and a crying face emoji. It looks like it's going to be so fun. ! So yes, I would love to go with you. Yes. ! Great. It's a date. And then we've got Steed writing away there for a bit before he replies, is it? A date, I mean. Yes, it absolutely is. Little smiley face. And then in brackets, if you want it to be, more brackets, fingers crossed. And more brackets. Please. And Steed replies with the colon, capital D, smiley face. Now it's Wednesday, 11:37 a.m. And Ed sends 5! Edward, hello, smiley face. Did you just... fuck. Did you and your kids just find my dinosaur? Sounds like you found your dinosaur. Ed sends a picture of a giant dinosaur skull. And Steed responds, that's thrilling. It's so big. Ed replies with 3 skull emojis. How did you know? Magic. You got the 3 stars and a winking face emoji. Now it's Thursday, 3:46 p.m. Hi, hoping school is over by now, so I'm not interrupting. We think we have 5 full skeletons, 2 adults and 3 juveniles from the radiography, plus a few eggs. Yes, school is over. Thanks for being so considerate. I do have my phone on silent through the day, unless we're on a field trip, so feel free to text me whenever you like, if your mood strikes you, that is. I don't want to presume anything about how you spend your time, especially during a busy workday. Ed, that's incredible. I'm so happy for you. Also, found some cool plant fossils that you and Lucius might like. Fucking hell. It's the find of the century, if I'm honest. And while Steed's typing away, Ed sends, I could kiss you. Steed stops typing. It sends another message. Consensually, of course. And after a bit of time, Steed responds, consent is active and ongoing. And we got some dots from Ed while he thinks. Well, I'm still going to ask for permission. And we got another grinning face with the colon D from Steed. Now it's Friday, 7:17 a.m.
Good morning, Dr. Teach. With a little dinosaur emoji. Hiya, Mr. B. We got the nerd face emoji. Sorry to text so early, Ed, but I wanted to get this in before work. I thought I could send someone to pick you up for our date, if that's all right, so you don't have to ride your motorcycle. Not that I don't want to see you on your motorcycle. It's just that it'll be dark and there might be drinks and I thought it would be safer. If that isn't okay with you, I completely understand. Lamau, Steed, take a breath. I'm breathing. Mostly. Are you nervous about our date? Yes. Me too. Oh, thank fuck. Excited too. Me too. And Ed sends purple heart, a blue heart, and the three stars emojis. So are you some sort of fancy man? Sending your car to get me? Oh, well, I do have a substantial inheritance, but I try to use it for good. It was my family's money and it wasn't exactly obtained in the best of ways. I donate most of it to local museums and libraries, youth art programs, a non-profit cat shelter, some social justice organizations, mutual aid, my school's booster program, etc. Steed, that's amazing. A ride would be great. That's not a double entendre. I knew it wasn't, but now that's in my mind. And in brackets, did you know that's called the power of suggestion? Ed responds, hey. No pressure from me, okay? I just want to spend time with you. We like each other, and that's okay. Doesn't matter to me what happens, as long as I get to see you again. Yes. Yes, all right. Okay. And Steed sends the smiling face with the hearts around it. Could you text me your address? I'm sending Mr. Buttons to get you. And now it's Ed's turn to respond slowly. You're having me picked up in a school bus by the bird guy. With his pet bird. And Steed is the same pause while he's typing. Yes. When you put it that way, ... Ed replies, I love it. Oh, woohoo. Let's do it. See you tonight. See you soon, Ed. Well, that was an experience, says Ed to no one in particular as he stumbles off the bright yellow school bus onto the sidewalk in front of the restaurant Steed picked for dinner. He turns and gives Buttons and Liv a salute before the balding man closes the door. Enjoy your evening, Captain. While the old school bus rumbled through busy city streets, a man named Nathaniel Buttons declared that Ed had previously led a seafaring life and would look quite ferocious in a tricorn hat. When he boarded the bus, Ed had watched Buttons pull and press a series of knobs, buttons and dials, none of which made any logical sense, before the bus had lurched forward from Ed's hotel driveway. Over the subsequent harrowing 15 minutes, Ed had also avoided two loads of seagull shit, learnt a lot about Scottish law, listened to a radio station that just sounded like pure tone, and nearly lost the contents of his stomach. His head is spinning like a top. As Buttons readies to drive away once more, Ed feels like the headlights of the bus might be winking at him. But that couldn't be right, could it? Actually, yeah, that's exactly what it's doing. Ed salutes the bus too, for good measure. The bus makes a huge sighing noise before the engine revs. Buttons takes off at high speed and somehow manages not to crash into oncoming traffic. The bus disappears in a large white cloud of exhaust that smells like lavender and orange blossoms. Ed shakes his head, mind abuzz from the ride, then looks around. Steed hasn't arrived yet, and miraculously Ed's a few minutes early for their date. He takes a moment to check himself over. He smooths out a couple wrinkles on his heather maroon Henley that he paired with dark washed jeans, motorcycle boots, and his favourite cropped leather jacket, a present to himself after securing his first grant, with a real dinosaur tooth fossil sewn into the shoulder. The wild ride had made his bun come loose, so he redoes his hair in the reflection of the curtained restaurant window, humming a Fleetwood Mac song to himself. Ed! Edward! Hello! Ed whips around to see Steed hurrying down the sidewalk towards him. So sorry, one of the children's parents called me and wouldn't get off the phone. I should have texted. Nah, mate, it's cool. I thought I was going to be late, but Buttons is fucking fast. I hope he at least followed traffic laws, Steed frets. Not at all, Ed replies, remembering how Buttons made some absolutely impossible law of physics bending moves on the way here. Steed blows a puff of air from his mouth in annoyance. It has the effect of ruffling the front of his coiffed golden hair. Ed's fingertips itch to touch it, to touch him. But he holds himself back with what he thinks is admirable restraint. Hi, he says, as Steed reaches him, looking the man up and down before settling his gaze on Steed's face. There's a moment of awkward silence that Ed breaks in a rush of pent-up feelings from the past few days. Can I hug you? Steed nods, laughing breathlessly when Ed wraps him up in his arms for a tight embrace and lifts him off his feet. Ed spins him once before gently setting Steed down. When they pull away, Steed catches him by the elbows and peers at Ed, smiling in a mystified but pleased sort of way. What was that for? Because you found my dinosaur, mate. You found it, Ed. Not without help. Steed shakes his head, then steps back. He coughs, and Ed narrows his eyes at him suspiciously. You would have found it eventually, Steed hastens to say, as if he thinks Ed hasn't caught on that there's something weird about Steed Bonnet and his unusual school bus and his smart-as-all-get-out students. Not to mention Buttons and the apparently psychically connected seagull. Steed hastens to cover his tracks. It's adorable, really. And isn't science usually a collaborative effort? Maybe, says Ed, not entirely prepared to let this fascinating man off the hook. We just felt like over there might be a good place to look. Seems pretty magical to me, mate. Bottom lip caught between his teeth, Steed looks at him with wide, nervous eyes. When he sees Ed's amused expression, his face softens. A little bit, he says, almost in a whisper. Ed grins. You look nice, Steed. He really does. He wears a sharp mustard blazer over a white button-up shirt. His tailored teal chinos amplify the lovely curvy shape of his calves and ass. He's got on the same moth-patterned leather wingtips, newly polished. The blazer looks custom. Surely everything Steed owns must be custom, Ed muses, at least given what he has seen so far. He can see a hint of golden satin lining when Steed shifts, and the outside is embroidered subtly with swirling patterns that remind Ed of the ocean. Steed picks at the cuff of his jacket, a bashful smile tugging at his lips. Oh, this? I call this my battle jacket. I wear it when I don't quite know what to do or say, but I want to be brave, if that makes sense. Ed finds this immensely charming and wants to kiss his face off. Instead, he takes Steed's hand, squeezing in what he hopes is a comforting way, and doesn't let go. Steed squeezes back, his smile growing wider. Ed feels his heartbeat speed up in his chest. Yeah, I get that. I guess that's why I'm dressed like this, too. You
Steed pauses to peer at Ed, as if really seeing him for the first time that evening. His mouth falls open in a bit of shock. You were so... I mean, you look nice too, Ed. Dashing, really. Don't tease me, Ed scoffs, but he winks at Steed. You can feel his face heating, hoping the beard and the dim light of the street cover it. Let's get a bite to eat, yeah? I think we can walk to the museum from here. That would be absolutely lovely, Steed says. Dinner is easy. Ed wavered between giddiness and catastrophizing in his head about their date for days, but he shouldn't have worried. Everything feels easy with Steed. They understand each other, despite being literal strangers and from wildly different backgrounds. Steed is weird and quirky, a nerd with a bit of darkness and sadness in his past, yet he radiates the delirious sweetness and thirst for knowledge that Ed could bask in for the rest of his life. He knows he's getting ahead of himself, probably, but from the moment they met there was a spark, and Ed wants that ember to burst into a flame. Steed seems delighted to learn that Ed loves the theatre, especially musicals. They make plans to go to a play together, Ed buying tickets on his phone for the following week, before they both realise the implication that whatever this is, it will continue. They walk to the Science Museum after hours event, bumping shoulders and giggling, not an ounce of alcohol between them. They swap stories about growing up in Aotearoa. It's the best Ed's felt in ages, maybe ever, and they've barely started their date. At the door to the Science Museum, they get lanyards and walk inside to find the after-hours event already bustling. It's the same exhibits as always, ranging from natural history to modern tech demos to science experiments and art projects. But during the day, they're usually swarming with children, including Steed's own class 2 or 3 times a year, he shares, as he and Ed get in line for the bar cart. They sort through small plastic pockets dangling from their lanyards, each finding their drinks cards, raffle tickets, and a pass each to a Celestial Oddities laser show in the museum planetarium.
A laser show?
Awesome. They stare at each other. Are we nerds? Ed asks tentatively. Because if you want me to be cool, I can be cool. Really cool, even. And miss the full Edward Teach experience? Steed demands, eyes widening comically. He leans towards Ed conspiratorially and whispers, I think you're very cool, Ed, even if you are a nerd. It's all right, because I'm right there with you. Yeah, okay. This is going to be fun. Steed flushes a fetching pink, just like he had at the dig site when they first met. Lavender, gin and tonics acquired. They visit the interactive exhibits first. There's all kinds of stuff about movement, sound, gravity and light and shadow. They build race cars out of different wooden parts and watch their creations race against an old woman's. Her vehicle beats both of theirs handily. Your cars are weighted wrong, gentlemen, she calls, a haughty swing in her step as she leaves them in her dust. We're fucking scientists, man, Ed mutters under his breath to Steed. We've got to do better than that. After they spend 10 minutes arguing good-naturedly about building the perfect car and miss 3 races, they give up and wander through the less trafficked exhibits. Ed shows Steed some of the fossils his university has on permanent loan to the museum in the dinosaur section, which houses an impressive triceratops skull that Ed helped unearth in his 30s. They linger in an exhibit about pre-industrial ships, wind propulsion, and the physics of sails. There's an aquarium tunnel where Ed thinks Steed will kiss him under the light dappling their faces. No one's there with them under the flickering shadows of sharks, silver schools of fish, and an unimpressed octopus. They're so close that Ed can smell Steed's cologne, can feel the heat of his body in his space. Instead, Three tipsy people shatter the moment as they enter the tunnel, giggling and startling them both. When Ed turns back, Steed just quietly asks if he can untangle a small snarl in Ed's beard. Ed lets him, holding his breath when Steed's fingers gently graze his cheek. Then Steed takes his hand and they go wave at the octopus together. What's your favourite dinosaur? Steed asks after they deposit their cocktail glasses back at the bar cart. Ooh, Mr. Bonnet, in with the proper questions. Steed beams. It's my favourite icebreaker, for children or adults. Everyone has one, right, Dr. Teach? Yep. What's yours? Apatosaurus, says Steed immediately. Solid choice. Love a good long neck. Ed suspects that Steed watched The Land Before Time over and over as a kid, just like he had. Bit dark, but that was 80s children's media for you. Mine's Micropachycephalosaurus. Steed blinks. Say again? Micropachycephalosaurus. Steed mouths the syllables silently. He scrunches his nose as he thinks, spinning his lanyard around his fingers. Tiny, big-headed, no, thick-headed lizard? Ed grins, delighted. Yeah, exactly. It's my favourite because it's got the longest name of any dinosaur. Plus, I think it'd be pretty cute. I'd keep one as a house cat and I'd name it Teacup. He bumps Steed's shoulder when the man laughs, quite pleased with himself for causing that lovely, hearty sound. It sends frisons of anticipation down his spine, pooling hot in his belly. So what about you, Mr. Planivore? What's your favourite plant? I'm quite fond of moss, actually. Steed talks quite happily about moss. Moss predates dinosaurs by at least 150 million years. And then other plants he likes, ferns, edelweiss, lilies. For at least 10 minutes, he wasn't kidding when he said he liked plants. They bypass several exhibits and Ed absolutely doesn't care. He can't get enough of Steed Bonnet. The laser show is in the planetarium. The lower level has been cleared of seats so people can lie down on the floor to immerse themselves. It's near the end of the evening and there aren't many people in the room, just a few people midway up on the mezzanine. Steed spins in a slow circle in the middle of the empty space, looking up at the domed ceiling. Ed watches him with a small smile before addressing the problem at hand. It's hard to tell in the low light, but the floor is probably disgusting. Definitely a little sticky underfoot, especially for Steed's fine clothes. But Steed gamely lays on the floor when Ed throws down his jacket to pillow their heads. Ed stretches out beside him. This is a bit of fun, isn't it? Steed gushes. Whew, I've got the program. He pats around the inside of his jacket before removing a small slip of paper and brandishing it in Ed's face. Ed pulls out his phone to use as a flashlight. Steed holds it above them, but they have to scooch close to read it together. Celestial Oddities Laser Show. An evening of cosmic proportions. With selected musical pairings. Warning. Bright and flashing lights. Loud music. Ed reads off the song titles. Cassiopeia. Why Does the Sun Shine? Constellations. Jupiter, Bringer of Jollity, Gnossian number 5, Stella, Space Oddity, Somebody to Love. This playlist is somewhat random, don't you think? Ed squints the list. I mean, it's space-themed, but yeah, it's all over the place genre-wise, and it's all white people, which is not exactly inspiring. Also, where's Rocket Man? Or Starman? Such good points, Edward, Steed says seriously, nodding. Ed would pin him to the gross floor and kiss him silly, if nothing because he looks put out on Ed's behalf, and few people in Ed's life have just done that, like it's easy. Is Queen space-themed? Queen is awesome. I certainly can't argue with that. Oh, I played this They Might Be Giants song about the sun, the kids' version, of course, for my class last month when we had our space unit. When we what, exactly? Ed wonders, but before he can ask, the lights go out abruptly. He drops his phone on his face in the effort to turn off the flashlight. A bored, disembodied voice over a microphone tells the sparse audience that the evening of cosmic proportions has a duration of 31 minutes and 12 seconds. It's a mishmash of a planetarium show and a fucking laser light bonanza with the volume turned way up. It should be awful. It makes Ed kind of nauseous, but he loves it anyway. It starts with the eponymous constellation emerging from a midnight blue sky above their heads, the stars winking to life with drum beats in the song. Then more of the heavens. Draco, Tamangoroa, Hercules, Matariki appear in rapid succession, the sky spinning above them. The lasers come in just as the music swells in a chest concaving rhythm, the room exploding for a moment with light. Steve finds Ed's hand in the dark. There's barely a second to breathe before the solar song comes on and the laser show begins in earnest. A sun appears in the ceiling, flashing a cheeky smirk before dissolving into a light plasma. The abrupt transition makes Ed laugh. Then Steve starts giggling. Ed definitely doesn't hear the song after that, but he manages to calm down for the next song, which proves less peppy. The lasers flash less, more artistry now as coloured lines in the ceiling follow the cadence of the song. The music transitions into a sweeping orchestral piece from The Planets. Ed turns his head and realises with a start he can see Steed's face in the ambient light above them. Steed's staring up at the faux night sky, his free hand settled over his heart. His eyes shine with wonder. Ed slowly moves his leg so that the tip of his boot touches Steed's ankle. Steed sucks in a breath, not taking his eyes away from the ceiling, but Ed feels Steed turn his leg. His shoe bumps against Ed's boot and he squeezes Ed's hand again. Ed turns back to the show, his nerves tingling from head to toe. The next piece has nothing to do with space, constellations, or anything celestial as far as Ed knows, but whoever put the show together realised something key. It sounds like starlight. He could be floating in a tropical sea or somewhere in the cosmos for the way the chords and lights strike him. Ed hastily wipes his eyes. When he turns his head halfway through the piano composition, he finds Steed already looking back. His golden curls look almost silver, his eyes like mercury. Can I kiss you? Steed rolls onto his side and meets Ed in the middle. He sees Steed's eyelids flutter close the moment before their lips meet. Gently, tentatively, tenderly. The trill of piano notes and the rush of blood in his veins fills his ears. When he opens his eyes, Steed's smile is brighter than any sun. They spend the rest of the show shoulder to shoulder, thigh to thigh, gazing up at the paintings of light streaking across the ceiling in time to the rising music. They and the half dozen or so other people in the room belt out the lyrics of the final song together. Steve conducts with his free hand. The room lights slowly brighten. Ed blinks against the change. Steve gets up first, helps Ed to his feet, and retrieves his jacket for him.
He blushes when Ed hugs him again, wrapping his arms around Ed's waist. The energy between them is palpable, surely a physiological response to stimuli and hormones, something either of them could explain in textbook terms. His mum once told him that science is just magic that some people have found words to describe. Ed has always left space within himself for the unknown, for defiance of systems, for something akin to wizardry. So many questions remain, even if the answers are out there. Outside the planetarium, partially hidden behind a tall potted plant, Steed kisses him again. Ed winds his arms around Steed's neck as their mouths crash together, hot and filthy. He's half-hard in his jeans, rutting against Steed's firm thigh, not caring who sees them. Steed kisses like a dream, sweet and urgent, like he's desperate, like he's been waiting for Ed. Ed can't explain all the sensations that roil through him like witch fire. This connection is something else entirely, something entirely new. Steed pants against his mouth, fingers scrabbling over the back of his leather jacket, seeking purchase. Ed leans back against the wall, allowing a bit of distance between them. Steed looks thoroughly wrecked, his brow slick with sweat, his lips wet and kiss-bruised, his hair a mess. Ed expects he doesn't look much better. Edward, Ed's just fine, Ed interjects, earning himself another blush of pink. He never knew blushing was a real thing, but now he's seen Steed do it. All he wants is to lick the man's neck and soothe his heated skin, then make him blush all over again. I like it when you call me Ed. Ed, says Steed, smiling. I'm having a marvellous time with you. He cups Ed's face, fingers in his beard and tracing up his jaw and over his ears. His fingertips catch on the dinosaur tooth earring, the gold helixes encompassing the shell, sending shivers down Ed's spine. Steed's hands drop to his waist to steady him. Desire coils within him, a molten sort of magma nearing its eruption point. Ed buries his face in Steed's shoulder, inhaling deeply before nuzzling his nose against the hollow of Steed's throat and mouthing along his jaw. Oh, gods above. Steed tilts his head to give Ed better access. Take me home, Steed, Ed murmurs, pressing soft kisses into the man's neck. Before I strip you right here. Steed shivers against him. His fingertips dig into Ed's hips, hard enough to bruise. Behave, Ed, he says sternly, and, oh yeah, Steed's teacher voice definitely does it for Ed. Ed sucks on the long cords of his throat, fingers threading through his soft, soft curls. Steed whines, low and dark. Should I summon buttons? He asks eagerly, pulling away to search his jacket for his phone. Ed puts his hands on Steed's shoulders and gives him what he hopes is a smouldering look. We're getting a cab. He shushes Steed when he begins to protest. Seagull shit might really kill the mood, don't you think? Steed scrunches his nose, which, adorable, then nods. To the cabs. The cab takes them to a craftsman-style house with a wide front porch and a panel of stained glass in the front door. Ed urges Steed against the wall of fancy, colourful coats once the door shuts behind him. Before Steed can say anything, Ed kisses him. It's a soft, chaste kiss, in stark contrast to how their bodies press together, hard, long, wanting. Steed whimpers, gripping at the lapels of Ed's jacket as Ed runs his tongue along the seam of his soft lips. Bedroom? Yes. Yes.
Steed pushes Ed gently back so he can step out of the mess they've made of the man's lovely, colourful coats. Ed makes a mental note to inspect them later. He shucks off his leather jacket, then helps Steed out of his battle jacket and hangs both up on empty pegs. When he turns back, he finds Steed looking at him with a mix of awe and heat. Ed recalls, again, why he first felt like Steed's eyes look like gemstones, and they seem to hold a depth not unlike the ocean or a celestial sea. They get their shoes off somehow, kicking them away, then Steed is tugging Ed down a hallway. Ed's shirt comes off halfway to the bedroom when Steed stops abruptly to kiss him. He gets Steed's shirt untucked from his teal trousers and tosses the leather belt away before they're moving down the hall again. He hauls Steed into another long, filthy kiss against the doorframe to the master bedroom, grinding his hips against the answering bulge in Steed's pants. Steed's warm hands slide up his chest, catching on and then rolling Ed's nipples between his fingertips. He growls approvingly, yanking at Steed's shirt buttons until they come loose and the shirt slips down his arms, revealing milky white skin dusted with ginger hair and constellations of freckles that Ed plans to map with his tongue. Ed's vaguely aware of framed photographs lining the hallway walls, pictures showing Steed and knots of fifth graders in impossible situations, wearing scuba gear deep below the sea, riding a hot air balloon, floating in a dark void with Saturn in the background, with Buttons, Liv and a transformed bus hovering protectively nearby. It's impossible. It's incredible. It can't be magic. Maybe Steed's a time traveller. Or an alien. Or both. Well, maybe it's magic. Ed. Steed moans his name, and it's everything Ed has ever wanted to hear. It pulls him back to reality. As Steed's tongue slides against his, he decides that he can wait to ask questions, that he has time, that tomorrow is a new day. For now, tonight, this gorgeous, starling man wants Ed in his bed, and Ed will do anything to make him smile. Steed breaks away then, taking Ed's hand and kissing his knuckles like Ed is something special, and Ed, well, Ed just knows. He knows that he is falling for an elementary school teacher with a weird magic bus and a sweet smile who says his name like it keeps him breathing. Overwhelmed, Ed presses his forehead to Steed's for a moment, then lets Steed lead him over the threshold. Lightning is Hot by Edward Teach, PhD. Light, fire, and heat go together in the world. I would argue that these three things, along with water, fuel the universe. Lightning is a series of electrons flowing out of a cloud. Combustion is the act of burning or a rapid chemical process that produces heat and light. Sometimes lightning makes sparks fly and lights a few things on fire. In brackets, that's pretty cool, to be honest. We use sparks fly in everyday language. This is an idiom or expression which has roots in science. When sparks fly between two people, it means there is friction or a moment of emotional combustion. Does this have anything to do with dinosaurs? Nah. But it felt like lightning struck me in the chest when I met Mr. Steed Bonnet for the first time. I think he felt it too. Steed smiles at the naked man sprawled across the disheveled bed, arm flung over his eyes and silver-streaked hair fanned on the pillow. He's beautiful, long planes of skin adorned with Ta Moko and other tattoos that speak of journeys taken, alternate lives, paths yet mapped. His body is strong, soft around the middle, and it seems to Steed that Edward Teach may be the most compelling person he has ever met. Steed wants to examine him under a microscope, compose poetry about him, write about him in the history books. He wants to hold this man's hand. He wants this man to hold his heart. Ed isn't asleep, but they're both quiet in the aftermath. It's comfortable, easy. Steed draws random patterns in the linen sheets from his perch on the side of the bed. Ed nudges Steed's hip with his leg. Even though he can't see Steed, he grins when Steed touches him. Steed runs a hand up Ed's calf, circling his thumb through the soft curls and pressing harder when he reaches Ed's knee. Ed lets out a satisfied moan, so Steed does it again. He doesn't know Ed all that well yet, but there's something about him that draws Steed like no one he can recall. Everything about Ed is absolutely lovely. Steed feels fulfilled from his job, from teaching, from helping kids find the things that excite him. His life is filled with joy, exploration, adventure. He had no idea he was missing anything else until this man came unexpectedly into his life. There's something playful about him, something incredibly special and sweet. It's so easy to talk to him, to talk about anything that crosses Steed's mind. He's open to new ideas, new experiences, change. That is something Steed doesn't find in many adults and tries desperately to cultivate in his students before someone else tells them the world only works one way. Maybe one day Steed could tell this person everything. "What are you looking at?" Ed asks, his tone amused. He lowers his arm from his face. "The man of my dreams," Steed replies, paling when his brain catches up with his mouth. "Oh, gods, I'm so sorry. I'm a bit overwhelmed and I..." Ed's sitting up and tugging Steed into his lap before Steed can melt into the floor. "You can't just say shit like that and not kiss me, Steed, middle name Bonnet, right now." Steed obeys. It's not so hard to kiss him with the beard, Steed thinks, as their lips meet and Ed pulls him closer so their chests press together. In fact, the rasp of Ed's beard against his cheek reminds Steed of how it felt brushing against his inner thighs an hour earlier. He groans and kisses Ed again and again and again. Ed pulls back to suck small bruises into his shoulders to tease his pink nipples with his tongue. Steed tangles his fingers in Ed's long hair, unable to stop the roll of his hips, even though neither of them are ready for a second round. Ed runs his hands up and down Steed's naked back, squeezing his ass cheeks hard. "My middle name is Valerie," Steed gasps, arching. "Steed, Valerie Bonnet. It's an old family name." Steed expects Ed to laugh, but he doesn't. Instead, he tucks a stray lock of hair behind Steed's ear, looking at Steed like he's hung the moon. And really, that isn't fair. "I'd like for you to stay the night. Would you, please?" "Not sick of me yet, Steed?" "I can't imagine a universe where I'd ever be bored of you, Ed," Steed says honestly. Ed stays. Steed gets them both water while Ed fixes the bedding, then burrows himself under the duvet, waiting for Steed to return. When Steed gets into bed, Ed all but grabs him and pulls him close. "Is this okay?" asks Ed. "More than..." "Great," Love that. Ed yawns loudly, then buries his face in Steed's chest, tickling him with his beard. He holds tight while Steed squirms and relaxes. He murmurs approvingly when Steed tentatively strokes his hair. I'm going to sleep now. I expect more plant facts in the morning, and planet facts, and art or whatever. Yeah, something else you're into. I want to hear all about it. I want the same from you, Steed says, heart beating so fast that surely Ed can't miss it. I want to know about your adventures, the things you like outside of dinosaurs. Ed snuggles in somehow closer. Music, theatre, pyrotechnics. Piracy, mostly of video games. Fine fabrics and sandy beaches. Trips to China. Sexy school teachers. You know, deeply cool stuff like that. Steed feels more than hears Ed drift off, the weight of the man on his chest shifting as his breaths even out. He smiles down at the man in his arms, tucked around him like an octopus, and sighs. Ed would teach. Edward. Ed. Such a simple name. But to Steed, it also sounds like magic. The end. Take chances, make mistakes, and get messy. Ms. Valerie Frizzle.